The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard on corners in town, like a cancer that's silently spreading. There's an unspoken fear we're on our way down. We must take America back, Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C., before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps.
Oh, gosh, what an appropriate song. I mean, that one, you know, how could it get any better than that? Welcome, folks, to the National Intelligence Report for the 18th of August here in the year of 2023. And let's make sure that we take care of our host here. Let's make sure that we do whatever we can to keep RBN out there, putting their people out there and the message out there. We have to have free speech if we are to exist as anywhere near a free country. And we can't do it sitting on our butts doing nothing. So it's about time we jumped up and started to do something. So let's do what we can to get RBN adequate help, adequate support. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, hit that donate button, or make a phone call. Find out a way to make a monthly contribution or whatever you can actually afford. Whatever you can do, every bit that you can donate is appreciated. I promise, and it will go towards keeping free speech alive in this country. Without it, we're dead. Well, let's jump into this, and I am just most fortunate to have my good old buddy with me today from up there in the mountains of North Kakalaki. And that would be none other than the man himself, Blackbird 9. Frederick, how are you, buddy?
Greetings, good sir. Happy Friday from all of us here on Blackjack Mountain, North Kakalaki.
How many of you are there up there now?
Oh, I can't give away numbers. You know better than that. You know, never give away your deployment numbers.
Oh, that's for sure. You got that right. And don't tell them where the perimeter is either, right?
That's right.
Well, buddy, I'm really glad. You know, I contacted you earlier in the week and I asked you if you were ready to do this, and you said you had the time, and I sure appreciate you taking your time to do this, Frederick, and thank you so much for that.
Always a pleasure, good sir. Always a pleasure.
Well, one of the things I've been thinking about even more and more and more intensely lately, Frederick, is this. You know, we look around us and, you know, I listen to other talk show host, and I listen to other people talk about the things that's happening. And, buddy, I think we're blaming the wrong people. We're blaming the Congress. We're blaming the government. We're blaming all of this other stuff. But when it boils right down to it, who's putting up with it?
I mean,
That gets to be a little bit tricky when we stop thinking about it, because nobody wants to look in the mirror.
That's right. That's the whole thing. That's, you know, this is supposed to be participation government, you know, government of the people, by the people, which means you don't get to abdicate. And I think that hits the nail on the head of this concept of white middle-class America basically has abdicated, you know, their responsibility in making this great experiment of self-rule work. And instead, everybody's virtue signaling about, oh, well, we've got a Muslim and a Paki, and we've got, you know, a LGBTQ tranny. And yeah, so we are so progressive. Oh, let's virtue signal how we're helping all of these other groups that completely hate us and want us gone, right? Yeah. But that's where you run into this is, yeah, we have abdicated, and the white man, we now know, you know, there, oh my God, there really is a war on us. Yeah, these people want us dead. And the only white women that are allowed in this new, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's not America, you know, are the women who have turned on the white men that are part of the slime mold system, you know. So, you know, that is what we're up against. And so it's just this, you know, full spectrum, you know, assault on wiping us out and removing us from the equation because they've got this globalist, you know, globo homo new world order agenda, you know. And so this is, you know, this wasn't what I was planning to do in my, you know, elder years. We were talking earlier about, you know, what are you doing a Friday afternoon in your elder years? You know, I didn't really want to be, you know, watching my country disintegrate. You know, I was wanting to be taking the grandkids fishing and stuff like that, right? So, but that's where we are. So back to you.
Well, Frederick, one of the things that I was thinking about is, one of the things that always has stuck in my mind and will never, ever leave as long as I have a couple of cognitive cells to rub together, and that was the fact is the conversation I remember having on the seventh floor of that old building where we used to live.
The big black cube.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation there with my immediate supervisor. And we went into, I mean, I was really troubled with what was happening because I was very upset that now what I was seeing was the majority of the operations that were being done were being run against American citizens. And that troubled me because I thought our enemies were over there. I thought they were across the pond. I thought, you know, these were the people I thought was our enemies.
So was this before or after the church Senate hearings?
This was a little bit after.
After, okay. Because so, you know, that was when they, you know, it was exposed that they were indeed, you know, running these operations and political operations. You know, everybody's talking about how weaponized the DOJ is now. And it's like, you know, we had the CIA and NSA running ops, you know, in the 70s on us, got caught, had the church hearings, and supposed to have fixed everything. And lo and behold, look what you had. And then flash forward, you know, to before 9/11, and good old General Michael Hayden has the helm at the NSA,
oh,
thanks to tricky Bill Clinton, right?
Durnza, yeah.
And when I'm, you know, I was doing my classes on an international scale. You know, I was teaching in Europe and, you know, the, you know, Caribbean, et cetera, just down to Trinidad and up into Canada. You know, so I was all over the place. And so I had to be able to adapt my classes of how to transition to the new 3G networks that were going in, you know, to both a European telephone system and an American telephone system. Yet American telephone systems are very unique. They use a special signaling called T1 signaling. European systems and the rest of the world pretty much used E1 signaling. So I'm working with the my handler at the NSA and say, okay, I'm assuming you want the international version of this class. And she was like, oh, no. And of course, it was this Jewish woman, right? And I wonder if she had a dual Israeli passport.
Imagine but,
you
that.
Know, you know, and but just very, you know, oh, no, we want, you know, the one that's in the catalog for America. You know, that's the one we want. You know, it's just really agitated by that question. But I was just like, oh, my God, this is when I was still doing politics. And I was like, oh, my God, I just stumbled into the new, you know, Spygate, you know, and lo and behold, look what happened, you know. But and when I tried to bring that knowledge to, you know, my political party, they didn't want to hear it. And then 9/11 happened and they still didn't want to hear it, right? But it's like, yeah, wake up. They are running an op on us. And yeah, so to finish your story, I didn't mean to jump in there.
No, no, that was great, Frederick. That's great to add that in there, because this was right after the church hearings and the church committee hearings. And I had some questions, and I said, you know, and it ended up being quite a lengthy conversation. Well, a week later, less than a week later, 5 days to be exact, I resigned, because I battled this over and over in my head every night. I couldn't sleep, you know, and I'm thinking, are my fellow Americans, are they my enemy? And I couldn't resolve that. And then, of course, I had been involved in the POW thing, and that was really eating me alive as well. So I didn't resign quite as forcefully as Colonel Millard Peck did at the DIA. But I did go in and I said, you know, here's my notice. I can't do this anymore. Well, as soon as I said that, my security clearance was removed, and I was given, you know, some wonderful task, you know, burn bags and stuff like that. So until I left. But I could never get that conversation out of my head, Frederick. It would not leave me alone. So about 20 some years ago, I decided I was going to sit down and write out this conversation. I had to get it out of my head. And I felt like if I could get it on paper, I could take care of it. So I put this whole thing into kind of like a hypothetical conversation. Deep in the bowels of government is the way I phrased it. So I put this conversation together and I published it back with the old Sierra Times. J.J. Johnson, I'm not sure if you remember him.
I remember the Sierra Times. Wow, that hit a way back folder there. I hadn't thought about that in a long time. Wow.
Oh,
okay. So you wrote for that. That's impressive. Okay.
Okay, so I put it all together, you know, this hypothetical conversation. And, you know, and then, you know, things happen. You know, life goes on. You know, that's 20-some years ago. And recently when I was on, and I was talking about this with Scorpio on the phone last night. And so what I did was I, back a few years ago when I was on Revolution Radio, I brought this up to a lady who and I told her about it, and she was doing a daily program on Revolution Radio, a midday program, like 10 to 12 or something like that. I forgot what it was, and I'm not going to mention her name. But anyway, I sent it to her, and she sent me an email back, and she said, would it be okay if I read this on my program tomorrow without attribution? And I said, certainly. I have no problem with that. So the next day, Frederick, and maybe it's just coincidence, buddy, I hope it is, but anyway, this lady has a nervous breakdown on air. I mean, she just finishes it, and it just came apart on her, and she hasn't been on radio since. But anyway, the thing that I remember most about that conversation, and I'm certainly not going to do the whole thing for sure, but the thing that I remember was my supervisor telling me, your concerns are unfounded, because the American people will never wake up, because they have been indoctrinated through the school system for a century. They have their television, and he threw it back at me. He said, that thing you call a lobotomy box. They have that, and they have all kinds of entertainment to keep them busy. He said, look at the hundreds of thousands at every Saturday in the fall that go to college football games. And then the ones who run out on Sundays and watch cars go around in a circle real fast. And he said, we have no worries here. All the bases are covered. The American people are never going to wake up. Well, Frederick, at that time, I disagreed. And now, recently, over the past, what, 3-4 years since COVID, I believe it. I do not believe the American public will ever wake up. Now, can you convince me otherwise, dear sir?
Oh, zero-sum games. Okay. Bell curves. How many do you need to wake up to turn the ship of state around? You know, that's the question. It's like, you know, I know, you know, my previous life, you know, all my old friends, you know, my family, you know, et cetera, you know, they are locked in their cognitive dissonance bubble, and no amount of facts is going to change that worldview. You know, and that is very, very sad. It's like, you know, then they, of course, are right. That's the maddening thing, is all these brainwashed people think that they have the moral, ethical, and intellectual high ground on the matter, and any facts you have is just wild conspiracy theories, right? They can just dismiss it so they don't have to address it. And so, you know, but there are the people out there that are noticing, and you have that, you know, for every one person that notices and speaks up, you know, do you have 10 more that are thinking it, but aren't, you know, brave enough or secure enough, you know, in their position to be able to say it, but, you know, they agree with the sentiment, and then the other 10, you know, are the, oh, that's wrong think, you know, you know, we need to report you, you know, that kind of thing. And so, you know, you just look at the gaming of it, and thanks to the internet, you know, we're allowed, you know, real peer-to-peer communications, and, you know, the idea of, you know, once people, you know, notice the emperor has no clothes, then they are thirsty for knowledge. And that was one of the reasons my first show was called The Breakfast Club, is people waking up, you need, you know, breakfast. You know, here's, so, you know, and now we've moved on to the snack shack, right? You know, so the idea of, okay, you've woken up that you've been lied to your whole life. You know, here's some, you know, nuggets for you that are going to be crunchy, but you need to know this. And so I think, you know, that's where we are with the large people. And case in point, you know, one of the things I thoroughly enjoyed doing today that was keeping me from my chores of outdoor, you know, out weed whacking on the side of the Blackjack Mountain today. But I couldn't get away from the computer because on Twitter, Ed Gab, everybody was just swarming and piling on old Nosferatu himself, you know, Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL, for his, you know, audacious statements about Leo Frank, that, you know, he was innocent. And to have the entire world swarm the ADL was, you know, a Friday treat, to say the least, you know. And so for that, I say, yeah, if people are waking up to the ADL and waking up to the Holocaust, they got nothing, you know. And so back to you on that.
Well, Frederick, is it too little too late?
You know, that is the thing. You know, we talk a lot about this, that, you know, basic, you know, what I've learned from you and like Larkin, Texas, and people like this is just, you know, you kind of have to get your head around where we really are in the United States of America. And that basically what we thought was a constitutional republic that all got changed in the shadows, but they've been carrying out the illusion of a constitutional republic when in reality they were putting in this completely different system. And I love the quote from Frank Zappa where he says, you know, the illusion of freedom will continue as long as it needs to, and then, you know, everything's going to, the chairs are going to go out, the tables are going to be moved, and you're going to see the cement walls there, right? And yeah, that's where I think we're headed, to basically a Haldimore 2.0. We're going into break.
There we go, buddy. We'll be back on the flip side.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Heart of Texas, back in 1835, they drew a line in the sand. The folks at Gonzales had freedom on their minds. It was all because of a cannon that had kept their colony safe. But then General Santa Anna sent some Mexican troops to take the big gun away. You know what those colonists said?
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but we'll warn you, you'll have to pry it from our cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line.
Hey, thank you, producer. That just hit the nail right square on the head. But here's the thing, Frederick. Do we have the people with the intestinal fortitude to actually take freedom back?
Well, the rebel madman asks the man without a country. That's one of the things about this. You know, when I got blacklisted, you know, that was from this entity that has seized control of our government, right? So I always think about the old Nathan, or was it? Edward Everett Hale's story, The Man Without a Country, right? And yes. I think a lot of us are feeling that, you know, what we thought was there isn't there anymore. And this isn't just a USA, USA issue. This is every white nation in the world is going through this same demoralization in, you know, Kalergi plan, Cloward-Piven plan, you know, invasion and overpopulation to collapse the system and turn it into, you know, this big Soviet police state run by the chicken swingers out of Greater Israel. I mean, this is the plan. And, you know, to go through these last 20 years of post 9/11, you know, 9/11 changed everything, sure changed me. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, these people are really playing hardball and they want us dead. And that's the thing, is you're looking at a genocidal agenda and a zealotry about it. You know, these Chabad Lubavitch guys are insane with their zealotry and drunk with their success of all their numbers, that they have bigger numbers now in their banking than we do because they rigged the system against us. So, you know, people are seeing left and right, you know, what's going on. And I think this explains, you know, just the demoralization of our homeless population, where people see it is just too big. They can't see that we can fight against this. But at the same time, you just see all of this energy coming out in some of the most peculiar places, you know, where just these random swarms of, you know, something happening and pushing the Overton window, you know, way over and exposing what's going on. And, you know, of course, my biggest fear is that they are able to just turn everything off and let chaos reign before we can expose them and neutralize them. You know, that's my big fear. When they say the Great Reset in 2030, you know, the Klaus Schwabs and the Hore Nova, you know, whatever that little public intellectual name in Israel that's, you know, so genius about his New World Order plans, you know, that they just have to turn everything off and let chaos ensue and then, you know, go in and just start, you know, massacring people like they did, you know, in the Holodomor, the Armenian genocide, the Bolshevik Red Terror. I mean, this is how these people operate. And you've got a corrupt military that's, you know, bringing in people that have no allegiance to the United States that they will be putting on U.S. soil. They're not going to have a problem mowing down white Christians in the Appalachian Mountains. You know, they're not going to have any repercussion or, you know, any hesitation. Somebody who's from this country, a white European descent person, they'd have a rough time convincing them to fire on Americans, right? But yeah, these dreamers coming in, you know, they're not going to have such, you know, hesitation. So back to you.
Well, Frederick, you hit again, you hit the spike that I've been thinking about for quite some time. Now, how do you, you know, take over a country? How do you do that? And I think one of the prime examples that we have to look at is what Thomas Stonewall Jackson called our Second War for Independence. Now, there were hundreds of thousands of European Marxists who came to America after 1848, after the revolts over there. They came to America. They bought newspapers. They formed their own political party. We know it today as the Republican Party. And they tried their first candidate with John C. Fremont in 1856, and that didn't work out. So then they cultivated their own candidate, one rail splitter by the name of Abraham Lincoln, and they cultivated him to the point to where it was an offer. And most people are totally unaware of this, where the offer was made, all right, Mr. Lincoln, you do exactly as we tell you to do, and we'll get you elected president. Well, they did it surreptitiously. They did it with a crooked election in 1860. The South was on to the trick. Lincoln wasn't even on the ballot in 10 Southern states. Lincoln gets elected president with 39% of the vote. And if we count that 39.8% of the vote, and when we consider... Okay, gotcha. All right, be back on the other side, folks.
Real talk, real people, because you can handle the truth.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names, Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
It's hard to find in the morning papers. It's hard to find in the magazines. It doesn't matter what show you tune in. It's hard to find on TV screen. But it's on talk radio. Truth is on talk radio.
Yes, folks, the truth is on talk radio, and it's not on the evening news with Tucker Carlson or Fox News or CNN or anybody else. Those people read from a script prepared for them by the CIA. It's called a PSYOP. And where I was previously was on the 1860 election, where 200,000 to 300,000 non-citizens were allowed to vote for as long as they voted for Abraham Lincoln, and as long as they promised they would become citizens within a certain period of time. Well, he wins the election. Imagine that. But here's the big question, and Frederick, I'd like your comments on this. These people's allegiance, these people who voted for him, these people who would later fill the ranks of the Union Army that invaded the South, raped its women, and destroyed its property. These people had no allegiance to this country or to the origins of this country or anything to do with this country. These people's allegiance was to Marxism. Your thoughts?
That is absolutely spot on, and that's one of the hardest things to get your head around, is that the Republican Party was started basically as a transition party for the, you know, the elite, if you want to call them that, that had given up on this failed experiment of America for the model that the British Empire was using with its Rothschild. This was, you know, the globo homo, Luciferian, you know, communist, whatever you want to call it, one world government thing. And so this was, you know, everybody was getting initiated into this, you know, Freemasonic system, and that was tied to, you know, the British system. You know, when 1717, that first Grand Lodge went in London. And so it's just fascinating when you see all of these communists, you know, coming from Europe with lots of bags of money, right? Hell, carpetbaggers always got those buckets of money coming in and being the energy behind the Republican Party and doing this big promo, you know, for the emotional support manipulation of what you taught me about Uncle Tom's Cabin, and that this was the whole thing. That was the psyop, was dump Uncle Tom's Cabin, you know, suddenly slavery becomes an issue, and we're going to join this party, the grand old party, and wipe out slavery, when what they were really doing was selling out America's infrastructure to this and banking system to this globalist Rothschild Warburg, you know, system. And but at the same time, yeah, they were fawning that, oh, we're the, you know, heritage American stock, right? And yeah, but that's not the case. And you see the, you know, what a caricature the Republican Party is now, where you've got people like Nikki Haley speaking for Southern values, right? And she's just off the boat from India. They planted her in South Carolina to wreak havoc on the heritage of South Carolina. Now we've got this Indian guy running for president, and he's saying all the right things, and all these Republicans are like, yeah, he's our guy. And I'm like, don't you see what's going on in Ireland and the UK, where you don't have white people in leadership positions anymore, you know, but they're a Tory, you know, or they're a conservative. It's like, no, you know, you are being replaced. This is a war on you. And this all started with this thing called the Republican Party, you know, and how that really influenced. And, you know, it's basically they, you know, said, you know, the equality of man, this, you know, the principles of the Constitution are just rubbish, you know. And I think, you know, social Darwinism of the time played into it as well, that, you know, they were the gods of the planet and everybody else was supposed to just serve them. And, you know, if they had to lie, cheat, and steal to bring in their order, they're willing to do this. And this is, you know, the, you know, black heart of the Republican Party that would quickly declare war and kill, how many hundreds of thousands of white Christian men, especially in the Appalachian Mountains.
Oh, yes.
People like Judah P. Benjamin, you know, tucked tail and ran with all his treasure, you know. They were saying, let's you and them fight, you know. And this was, you know, their modus operandi. They loved to have their enemies, which is white people, kill each other. And the Civil War, the uncivil war, war of Northern aggression, you know, is anything more ruthless than that war, you know, in our history?
No, exactly not, Frederick. And here's the thing. One of the primary spreaders of Marxism in the United States in the after 1848 through until our Second War for Independence was none other than Horace Greeley. Are you familiar with him? Where'd you go there, Frederick?
Oh, no, that doesn't ring a bell. Can you say it again? Horace Greeley?
Horace Greeley, G-R-E-E-L-E-Y. Whoops. Are you familiar with him?
That doesn't ring a bell. Take me
okay.
to school.
All right, get ready and sit down and put on your dunce hat here,
okay.
Frederick. Okay.
I'm in the corner with the dunce hat on.
All right, Horace Greeley owned the newspaper with the largest circulation in America. It was called the New York Tribune. And his senior editor was Charles A. Dana, who was an avowed socialist, an avowed Marxist, a close friend of Karl Marx. And he had tried several socialist experiments in America, which failed. The farm, I'm trying to think exactly the first name of that farm that they tried up north. But anyway, that didn't work. So he's the chief editor. So who writes over 5,000 editorials for the New York Tribune? None other than Karl Marx. And he was their prominent person. Many of them were done anonymously. It was just editorials, didn't say Karl Marx. But he did over 5,000 different editorials. All right, now Charles A. Dana, his very close friend, again is the editor. But in 1862, when Lincoln finds out that his Union Army, that the war wasn't over in 30 days like he thought it would be, or 90 days, and they're getting their butts kicked because of people like Stonewall Jackson, he decides that he needs a change in leadership. So he brings Charles A. Dana, an avowed communist, over to be the Assistant Secretary of War. And he calls him his eyes and ears. And so Dana, you know, comes in and takes over. Well, to go back to the funny part is that Abraham Lincoln and Horace Greeley were both in Congress together in 1848. And Lincoln always referred to Greeley as Friend Greeley, that in all of his correspondence. It was Friend Greeley. But now, I think of two things here. I think of one of the things that was in that conversation I was telling you about earlier was when my supervisor told me, he said, look, it's real simple. We can tell these simple bastards in America what we're doing, and they still don't catch on. And that made me think again when I saw and found this comment after the war by Horace Greeley. Now, listen, people, here is an admission. He admitted what they did right here. Let me read it for you. It's not that long. We have stricken the slave shackles from 4 million human beings and brought all laborers to a common level, not so much by the elevation of former slaves as by practically reducing the whole working population, white and black, to a condition of serfdom. While boasting of our noble deeds, we are careful to conceal the ugly fact that by an iniquitous money system, we have nationalized a system of oppression, which, though more refined, is not less cruel than any old system of chattel slavery, unquote. Your thoughts?
I'm reminded what an old political colleague of mine used to always say back when I was still playing politics. And he was a firm believer that he hated Abraham Lincoln with a passion, by the way, and thought he was the great deceiver. But he said Lincoln did not free the slaves. He merely nationalized the plantation. You know, and that fits right in with what you're saying with both, you know, this Horace character, Greeley. I mean, that you'll have to send me that quote. I want that quote in a meme. Yeah, that's exactly what the Marxist model is. There is no middle class. There's the elite hidden hand, and then there are the slaves. You have rewarded good slaves, and you have punished bad slaves, but everybody else is a slave. So this idea of a independent, free middle class is anathema to their master-slave system. You know, distributed peer-to-peer doesn't work in a Talmudic Jewish communist system because it is a master-slave system, always has been, always will be. And it's a centralized master-slave system. You know, it's just circles of power within circles of power within circles of power, but it's centralized versus the genius of what the great experiment was supposed to be of distributed peer-to-peer independent systems working for the common cause of remaining free and independent of those that would enslave them, like these chicken swingers, right? So that was great about Horace Greeley, though. And also just fits in with the what they call the Reformation amendments.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm pulling those up. Go back to you, and I'll be looking for this.
All right, buddy. Well, let's stop and think, too, about what we have here is the fact that this is actually a printed, certified statement by Greeley, but you can't get Americans to believe it. And this is the thing, and I talk to my classes sometimes on this subject. I'll never forget a debate I had in 1999 in Sacramento, California, with a professor when I had a group of people. We were on tour, and we were in Old Town Sacramento, you know, where the good old Pony Express, where it actually ended, and in that area. And I ended up having a debate with a professor of mathematics, but our debate was on gun control. And so we had the debate, and we were going back and forth very cordially. But near the end of the debate, the college professor says, for everyone to hear, and she didn't hold back any punches, she said, I don't care how many facts you have, you will never change my mind. Now, I don't know, how do you apply that to the field of mathematics?
Right. It's amazing the cognitive disconnect of somebody who's supposedly, you know, into objective science, but yet refuses to look at your data dots. And one of the things I talk a lot about is the concept of garbage in, garbage out, or GIGO that we had in computer, you know, programming.
Right.
You know, and this is what they, you know, do. It's that, you know, basically giving you some truth, half truths, and then lying by omission. That, yeah, this is how they keep that illusion going. And when you try to give people those data dots that have been omitted, you know, they don't know what to do with them. So they usually end up getting angry at you for challenging their worldview. That's what that whole cognitive dissonance thing is. But, you know, when you read, you know, the Reconstruction Amendments, that's what I was looking for, the Reconstruction
right.
Amendments,
13, 14,
the
13th, 15th.
14th, and 15th, right?
Yes.
And the infamous Red Amendment. And, yeah, this is right out of both Talmudic instruction and things like Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals. Saul Alinsky always said the first rule of community organizing is community disorganizing. You tear down what was there so you can put something else in its place. And lo and behold, after this Marxist uncivil war that tore everything down, we have the reconstructed amendments, you know, that basically installed this Soviet-style antithesis of the original plan, and they sold it. You know, they had, you know, that the war is over, and comes the great age of prosperity. But you and I know that, you know, what was happening before the uncivil war, you know, that has been lost, you know, and, you know, we have remnants of it, but it's not the same system. But because of gradualism, this is one of the things the Marxists always talk about, is gradualism, the boiling frog syndrome. And, you know, children, you know, they don't remember anything else. So whatever they're in is normal. You know, we old folks remember how it used to be. And I just, you know, think about what my poor father suffered through and my mother suffered through, knowing that, you know, this isn't the America that they grew up in. They were Depression era babies. But, right. You know, the Appalachian Mountains, and, you know, she was down in the French, you know, swamp territory, they came down the bayou. You know, those were still wild, pretty much free areas. And you know, for my father to, you know, be duped into World War II by Pearl Harbor, you know, and then to see all the changes through the 60s and 70s and 80s and then 9/11, you know, and he was just, you know, like me, I'm a stranger in a strange land that used to be my home. And so you see that this has been going on from, you know, day one in this great experiment of the new world. Back to you.
Well, Frederick, I want to throw a hypothetical situation at you, buddy. You got your catcher's mitt on?
I'll try.
Okay. All right. Imagine, if you will, that it's, you know, in today's world. Imagine, if you will, that we have millions of people out there who believe that the Second Amendment actually means something. Ah, here comes the music. We'll be back on the flip side, folks. See you then.
Gilad Atzmon says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up, with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, you know, LGBTQ, RS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What? Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, I don't know.
How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act. It's the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, yeah, I mean, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN.
free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
To the National Intel Report, the real talk radio show.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to the National Intelligence Report, National Intel Report, here on the 18th day of August in the year of 2023. I've got my catcher in the bullpen there, the good old Blackbird 9, and he's getting ready to catch a pitch. And my pitch would be this. In today's world, there are millions of people in this country who feel like they have the Second Amendment, which guarantees their right to keep and bear arms. That's what it says. And it also says, shall not be infringed. And yet this government has infringed on it over 2,000 times, and the people still think it works. If you went out to start your car 2,000 times and it never started, would you believe that your car was still good? I'm just throwing that in there because it makes no sense to me. But anyway, what if all of a sudden, you know, it could be, you know, the guy they would use for this would be somebody like Biden. Suddenly Biden passes an executive order and says, look, we're coming to take these guns because they're dangerous in a polite society. We're coming to take everybody's guns. Everybody who has a gun, I don't care what it says in the Constitution, everybody who has a gun, we're going to send our forces into your home, and we're going to seize your guns. While we're there, we'll rape your wife and your young daughter, if you don't mind. And then we're going to burn your place down. We may go out and dig up your cemeteries, you know, to see if you've hidden any guns in the graves of your loved ones. And then we're going to do all of this stuff. Blackbird 9, Frederick, do you think there would be any opposition?
Yeah. You know, that's one of the things, is just looking at the gradualism of firearms in this republic nation country. Economic Zionist zone, whatever it is. My grandfather, when he was a young man, could order a Tommy gun through the mail for, you know, a couple of dollars, right? And, you know, suddenly, we have to ban automatic weapons, military grade weapons for, you know, the civilians, and, you know, that they got away with that. It's just been, you know, the slippery slope ever since. And the brainwashing that, you know, we as a people endure going through these government schools and government universities that are just completely anti-gun. I'm here at Appalachian State University, home of the Mountaineers, which
queers.
Is now, you know, slime mold infested, and the, you know, globo homo rootless cosmopolitan clubhouse. You know, this is their little playground up here in the mountains. Everybody left their, you know, excuse my language, their shithole cities that they destroyed with these policies and moved here, invaded us, and now now is, you know, teaching these children, you know, that, oh, you know, guns are bad, and all these locals up here that have guns are all terrorists, and, you know, they're all, you know, we've got to pass laws now to protect us. Meanwhile, they're bringing in the third world, where every white person up here has to have a concealed carry just to go buy groceries now safely. You know, that is the insanity up here with all of this diversity. People like, you know, Chancellor Jezebel Everett and the, you know, the local High Country Synagogue and the Bible Fellowship and Franklin Graham Samaritan's Purse are just flooding busloads of people in here that hate us, and at the same time we're being told that, you know, having guns is bad.
Great time, buddy. Be back on the other side.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details, or visit 3DBunkers.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.